The Gary Knoll Show, daily at noon on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. This is an hour that I try to break into sections, each one addressing needs that are important for a large segment of our population. First and foremost, the definitive word on new scientific approaches to living a longer and healthier life. We call it the health and healing segment, and you'll see why in a few moments. Then we go to our environmental section, where we bring you the latest on what's going on in our environment. And today I'm going to combine our that segment with our issue segment. It's from Jim Garrison, and it's called It's the Weather, Not the Debt. Very interesting commentary that he gives from Huffington Post, and I'll read it. It's short, but I'll ask you then to call in and share your points of view. Instead of having a guest today, I will do a continuation of an in-depth original investigative report on the safety and efficacy of vaccines. Specifically, I am putting my energy into the issue that the vaccines automatically, when you get one or more, they create natural lifetime immunity, or immunity that will be with you for most of your life. And hence, you shouldn't worry about getting a disease because you've been immunized. We keep hearing the word immunized. I'm going to challenge that. As a scientist, as a journalist, I will use, as you will see, both tools. I will only quote from peer-reviewed literature. All of the references I am using in today's investigative report will be cited on progressiveradionetwork.com, GaryKnoll.com, and my Facebook page for anyone who wishes to use this. And then I will air a couple of pieces that I have listened to that I think are extremely important. In particular, one that is a follow-up to a program I did last night. Last night I did a 3.5-hour investigation into 9/11, but only using forensic evidence from outstanding experts and scholars. One of them made a comment, a woman who had been employed as an analyst in the White House and the Defense Department. She told me that Donald Rumsfeld was quoted as saying they couldn't find $2.3 trillion. It went missing. And I said, "Do you mean billion?" She said, "No, I mean trillion." Later last night, she sent me the link. She was right. It is $2.3 trillion. That will involve a little discussion. How does our government not have money to help 12 million hungry children? Doesn't have money for social services, allows a city that at once was a wonderful city, Camden, New Jersey, to become just a abandoned, forgotten, worn out, tossed away city. How does it happen that we could use that $2.3 trillion that they've lost, unaccounted for, no one's looking for it? That's not important to them. What's important to us? So I'll get into that. So let us begin. And I will be taking calls later, but not at this time. Five Ways to Avoid Burnout by Gabby Reese of McClatchy Tribune. I thought this was nice because so many people are stressed. And as we know, one of the things that happens when you're stressed for any reason, or multiple reasons, let's just say that you're... Well, at different times of life, people are stressed for different reasons. For example, I find myself now counseling many women who have grown families, they have the empty nest syndrome, they're stressed, especially if most of their life was acting as a soccer mom and going through the endless chores and details and responsibilities, and then one day they're gone. So all those to-do lists that would have included them are not there. Sometimes at that time, people find that their relationships begin to go on to the pattern of no more excitement, no more uniqueness, no more exploration. They just become dull and boring. It doesn't mean a person doesn't care about another person. It's just that there's not the energy. It's like the 25th mile in a marathon. You don't feel your legs, you don't feel your feet, you don't know where you're at, but you know you're in a race. And you hope you get through it. Well, how many people hope they get through their relationship, but there's no passion in it? So I find that people have multiple stresses. But what happens is, how do they deal with those stresses? Many times, they internalize them. That means that then they have elevated diseases. I believe that as important as cigarette smoking or alcohol or bad diet, chronic stress, harmful stress, does as much to cause inflammation, does as much to cause imbalances in hormones, which then can lead to cancer, heart disease, diabetes, dementia, Alzheimer's. There's a whole lot that can go wrong in your body when you do not deal with stress. And so getting a person to deal with stress in a healthy way, then start to make better choices about their lifestyle, you're able to get healthy again. Most people can. Not everyone will be cured of every condition. It's not possible. But you can sure make a difference. So here are some suggestions. Revive, number one, revive and restore your naps. Now this seems like it's so simple, but it's very important. When you take a nap during the day, you're not alone. Albert Einstein, Winston Churchill, Thomas Edison, all were famous nap enthusiasts. What they knew was that a midday nap can actually increase their effectiveness. Research has found that some of the reviving benefits of naps include enhanced cognitive function, better reaction time, stress relief, better overall health. And how long does a nap have to be? Well, I have a little headdress that I made for myself. And I invented it. I take it with me. And I lay down on a floor and I take a 15-minute nap. When I take that 15-minute nap, and by the way, it's not for sale. You can't buy it, so don't call. It's just something I did for myself. It revives me. Now, because I work long hours, any of you walking down Broadway at 2 o'clock in the morning, if you look up, you'll frequently see on the second floor my office lights are on and someone's sitting there. I'm counseling because I generally counsel from 9 to 10 at night till 2 in the morning because it's quiet and I'm not interrupted as during the day I am. One nap a day, generally in the middle of the afternoon. If we did that in businesses, if businesses actually had a little nap area where you could go and lay on a cot or something, or a little futon, you would be so much more effective with workers. They'd be having better focus, greater alertness, greater clarity. So I'm suggesting you take that nap. Then we have a simple, soothing, natural berry. It's called Chisandra. It's a prize berry that has been used for thousands of years to revitalize the senses, and it contains flavonoids. It's very good in its immune-boosting properties, and it's an energy tonic, and that enhances both physical endurance and mental concentration. At the same time, it soothes the nerves. It's been used to support immune dysfunction, especially people who are going through chemotherapy. It's grown in Asia. You can buy it in any health food store in the United States. I'm going to suggest 200 milligrams a day of Chisandra. That's Schisandra. I generally suggest people take Chisandra, 200 milligrams, with generally ginkgo, which will increase circulation to the brain, but also it relaxes the brain at 75 milligrams. But then theanine at 200 milligrams. That's what you get in green tea. Also, one way to stop from burning out is simply to take a walk. The moment you start walking fast, you start to relieve the elevated cortisol level. You also increase circulation into your joints and your musculature. That tight neck and clenched jaw, the lump in the throat, the chronic back and neck pain that come from being tense, all those are manifestations of stress in the body. So by physically just walking, you can cause energy to flow. It opens up your chakras, and that's good. Now, yes, massage therapy is good, yoga is good, Tai Chi is good, Qigong is good. Those are all good, but power walking is the best. And because you're just going to reduce your stress level. You take a walk, you're deep breathing, you're relaxing, and watch how your mind begins to calm down. That's what I suggest. Then, now this may seem a little odd for some, but create a buffer zone at home. In our busy lives, there's literally no downtime, even at home. And sometimes when you open up your front door, you get hit with more responsibility and more fires that you need to put out. And the solution is to create a little buffer zone. Give yourself the first 20 or 30 minutes when you get home. Don't go straight to the computer and check your email. Give yourself some time when you start cooking or cleaning. What will you do during this buffer time? Calming activities to help you restore your energy, like listening to music in your room. Taking a refreshing shower. That's what I do every afternoon. Because of all the taping I do on the radio and the filming and the writing and research and then counseling, my body energy has to shift. My focus shifts. So I'll take a shower when I get home. I like a cool shower. That nice cool shower really invigorates. And then just take some quality time, put on some wonderful relaxing music, and then take your time and start preparing your meal. And that prep time of washing and cutting and sautéing, whatever you're doing, all that is restoring you. So this break will shield you from the stress of jumping from one fire to another. And you'll find that your mood will improve, your energy will increase, and you'll be happier in your home with your family. I also believe in taking time away from technology. People, including my staff, are frequently surprised when I'll go a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks when I'm on the road, no cell phone, no computer, nothing. And you're just there with whatever you're doing, wherever you're at, and you realize there's a life beyond the technological gadgets we surround ourselves with. You know, you want to read a book, sit and read a book or a magazine article. You want to have a conversation, have one without the thought that someone's going to, oh, excuse me, and start reaching for a cell phone. I think it's very rude. I would never take a cell phone to dinner. It's just inappropriate. It lacks manners. It lacks sensitivity to the fact that someone is sharing their time with you. Honor that time. So take a break from technology. We're on overload from circuits and all the electromagnetic pulses, but we're just inundated with emails and a lot of, I consider, non-essential input. So that's important. Now, here's a message from University of Leicester, and they found that in this worldwide survey published in Clinical Oncology, people are clueless about the role of diet and cancer. Quote, public ignorance about key messages concerning diet and cancer. They found in this survey that people thought that you got cancer by being in an accident. Another group said that, yes, smoking caused cancer, but also any form of injury could cause cancer. It's wrong. That information is 50 years old. They did not place an emphasis upon diet at all. Now, you think with all we've done that people would know more? They don't. They were clueless about being overweight and increasing the rate of cancer, the lack of exercise increasing the rate of cancer. So clearly, people don't understand what causes cancer. After I read this and I read the numbers are just staggering. I decided last night that I'm going to do a new book. It'll take me maybe a year, but I'll do a book on what really causes cancer and ways to get over it, and then try to get it out there to as many people as possible, because they're not getting the message. Potatoes are the number one source and the most affordable source of potassium of any fruit or vegetable. And this is from the University of Washington, and here's what it says. Quote, a frequently expressed concern in the ongoing public health debate is that fresh fruits and vegetables, particularly those that are nutrient-dense, are not affordable to the average consumer. Well, research presented by the American Dietetic Association and the Food Nutrition Conference demonstrates that potatoes are one of the best nutritional values in the produce department, providing significantly better nutritional value per dollar than most other raw vegetables. Per serving, potatoes were the largest and most affordable source of potassium of any fruit or vegetable. Yeah. The vegetables are inexpensive. The potatoes are. Sometimes when I travel, depending upon how far I'm traveling, in my my backpack, I'll put a bag of organic potatoes. What do I do with them? Well, I'll go into a restaurant, I'll look at the menu, I'll select a dish, maybe a $20 or $30 dish, and I'll say, this is your most expensive dish. Yeah. What I'd like to do is I'd like to give you some potatoes or some rice or beans. Could you cook these up for me? And I'll pay you for that dish. It'll cost you nothing. It'll be a very profitable dish. And almost always they say, sure. So then I get garlic and onions and whatever seasonings that they have, but I'm doing it myself, especially when I'm driving. Like when I went to 27 states filming recently for my Poverty Inc. doc, I just loaded up a cooler with all kinds of grains, legumes, and beans, potatoes, and squash, and that's what I did every day, once a day. Finally, high blood pressure is linked to increased risk of developing or dying from cancer. This is from Science Daily. This is the European Multidisciplinary Congress, Cancer Congress in Stockholm, and here's what they said. I'll quote this. Increased blood pressure is linked to a higher risk of developing cancer or dying from cancer. This is the largest study to date to investigate the association between the two conditions. One more reason that you should really keep that blood pressure low, and there's no reason not to. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us. To welcome all of you, I'm Gary Nall. Going to go in a moment to an in-depth analysis of what I consider one of the greatest public frauds ever, that vaccines impart in every given individual safety and efficacy and immunogenicity, meaning you're protected for life. None of that can be scientifically verified. But I'm going to use their science, their published peer-reviewed literature of thousands of studies of which I have reviewed, to prove that point. But a couple things before then. As many of you know, last week we held a worldwide effort, last Wednesday evening, that lasted from 4 in the afternoon till 11:30 at night, over 7 hours, premiered 2 feature films, including Knocking on the Devil's Door, and we had one of the most dynamic panels I've ever been privileged to introduce, including Vandana Shiva, Greg Palast, Carl Grossman. Now, we're going to try our best, working all over the world, to close down the over 435 nuclear power plants. But we're going to start with Indian Point. Governor Cuomo has stated that he is concerned about the safety issues surrounding in endpoint, but that we don't know whether that's a political statement that has no bearing upon reality, but we want to let him know that you and I are making this an issue. I would like you, please, call Governor Andrew Cuomo and politely state we are opposed to Indian Point. It represents a true and present danger. We want it dealt with. We want it closed down. Now, if he should say, he won't be on there, but whoever's answering the phone, They take note of how many calls they get and what side of an issue people are coming down on. Call as many times as you can and keep letting them know close-end in point. Also let them know that every member of the New York Assembly, including his office, received copies of the film. We also sent them links to over 500 articles on why nuclear is not safe, not green, not clean, and is dangerous and is expensive. We are willing, myself included, to come to Albany and present compelling scientific evidence that will refute any of the pro-nuclear arguments that he has heard. So please call this number, 518-474-8390, 518-474-8390, 518-474-8390. We are just getting our permits today. I will be holding in the next couple of weeks, and I'll let you know when, but don't call now. We're going to do a demonstration in front of the governor's Midtown office as a backup to this phone call effort. So call the governor and tell him no to nuclear and close down Indian Point. And if we have all the physicists, we have the nuclear physicists, we have a whole panel ready to come forward. And any community-based television station that wants to air Knock on the Devil's Door, do so. We have people wanting to get it into different countries. Do so. You know, I'm putting it out there to help people. Next, beginning tomorrow evening, we are going to do a three-month anti-aging health support group. It will meet twice a month. It will be longer meetings, but it will give you the state-of-the-art of everything that I know will help slow down and reverse the aging process. You actually are aging by the age of 25. It's not as if you have to be old to appreciate the importance of the aging process. It's going to be a real eye-opener. We'll take your blood pressure, we'll do an impedance and weight, and then it'll be a major lifestyle modification change. And we'll be doing an interview on the first day and on the last day to see what the changes are. But hopefully you will make radical changes in your lifestyle, which will allow you to live a longer and healthier life. And I'm limited in how many people I can fit, and these are always full. There's never an exception. So call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. Now, I realize that tomorrow is the Jewish holiday, but for those attending then, fine, we'll be there, but for those who are observant and cannot attend then, you can come the following Wednesday, and we will have a separate information pack for you, so you will miss nothing if you can't make tomorrow evening. But it starts tomorrow evening, I'll be there. Now, this is an issue of the day. This is from Jim Garrison, and it's not long, but it's very important, because he's nailing it here. Quote, just a few months ago, on April 14th, a massive storm swept out of the Rocky Mountains in the Midwest and South, igniting more than 150 tornadoes that killed 43 people across 16 states. It was one of the largest weather catastrophes in U.S. history. Then came an even bigger storm, the 2011 super outbreak, that spread more than 300 tornadoes across 14 states from April 25th to the 28th, including an all-time one-day record of 188 tornadoes on April 27th, killing 339 people. Then came Hurricane Irene in August that ravaged the East Coast and killed 45. Then the Texas drought-induced wildfires in September set forward records for drought more than any time in the state's history. Wildfire damage, economic destruction, property damage from these events was calculated to be in the tens of billions of dollars, and they were only 4 of 10 multi-billion dollar catastrophes so far in this year alone, itself a historic record. What is even more alarming is that almost every other country in the world can provide similar examples. When you include all the blizzards, floods, earthquakes, heat waves, tsunamis, tornadoes, droughts, wildfires, hurricanes, cyclones. By the way, a cyclone's just gone through Japan, spreading radiation everywhere there, and now it's in the Philippines, and other extreme weather events that have been occurring around the globe, combined with the collapsing resilience of communities to withstand the onslaught, you have a world literally at war with itself. The real debate that should be called forth from our politicians is the fact that all of a sudden, At the same time, everywhere in the world, humanity is facing a common reality: radically rising weather turbulence at a scale not seen ever, and we are all completely unprepared. This needs to be underscored. The most significant fact about the rising weather turbulence is that it is emerging right at the moment when our governments are stripping down social services at every level of society with the same toxic mix of deficit reductions and emergency financial management. All essential, they tell us, for jobs and economic growth. Right at the moment when we urgently need them, most of our social support programs are being seriously eroded, while at the same time, cities, states, nations worldwide teeter on the brink of insolvency. This is what our elites are serving up to us, a perfect echo political storm. This perfect storm will not happen all at once and then be over. We are at the very beginning of an escalating cascade of crisis, a reality in which, month by month, year by year, decade by decade, the weather turbulence will get increasingly severe, our governments increasingly unable to adequately respond, until all around we will be experiencing a fusion of ecological instability and political and economic chaos at levels that will require increasingly radical measures for simple survival. A major ground for hope as we face this future is the fact that virtually every technical solution we need to stop producing CO2 and transition to renewable energy economy is here. We could actually deliver ourselves of the incipient catastrophe by simply doing what Lester Brown says will essentially solve the core problem: reduce carbon emissions by 80% in the next 8 years while transitioning to a clean green economy. All the technology exists to do this efficiently, quickly, and relatively easily. All that is necessary is the leadership to mobilize society for what must be done. Yep, okay, your thoughts on that? That's his view. I agree. In fact, I'm already preparing for that eventuality. I'll tell you my thoughts on what we could do in a positive way to get out of harm's way, but I want to hear your thoughts first. And we'll take your calls on that at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Now, I see we have Luann Panessi on the line. Luann's going to give us a little update on gangs in the suburbs. Remember, it was 2 years ago that I said that we are going to reach a point where we have so many gangs in the suburbs, in areas that were never, ever a gang havens, because that's where the money is. And 10% of all gang members are former military. So this isn't about gangs going after each other. This is about gangs going after you. And how is they reduce police protection, reduce fire protection, as homes are foreclosed on, as you become more and more vulnerable, the gangs are opportunistic, they're like parasites, and they're going to come after you. And they're doing it in increasing numbers. She's going to give us the latest on that when we come back from this. Now here is, and then I'll take your calls, but here is the second part of my in-depth original investigative report. The 2010 whooping cough outbreak in California caused 9,100 people to become ill and 10 babies died, prompting officials to recommend an additional booster shot for 12-year-olds. So far in the fall of 2011, California schools have already turned away thousands of middle and high school students who have not gotten the recommended booster shot, even if they had the original vaccines. Whooping cough, or pertussis, packaged together with diphtheria and tetanus, is given according to a robust vaccine schedule of 5 shots by age 6, the most of any childhood vaccine, at 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, 15 to 18 months, and 4 to 6 years. The whooping cough outbreak prompted much hostility and accusations towards parents who chose not to vaccinate their children. Along with a clamor to add yet more booster shots, even adults are now being asked to get a booster vaccine for every 10 years. Was the outbreak caused by the anti-vaccine sentiment in Marin County and elsewhere? That question was answered without fanfare during the second week of September with a study showing that the whooping cough vaccine given to babies and toddlers loses most of its effectiveness after just 3 years. Dr. David Witt, lead researcher of and chief of infectious disease at Kaiser Permanente Medical Center in San Rafael, California, said in a rare moment of frankness, quote, "I was disturbed to find maybe we had a little more confidence in the vaccine than it might deserve," unquote. The study looked at 15,000 children in Marin County, California, and found that youngsters who had gone 3 or more years since the last of their 5 original shots were as much as 2,000% more likely to become infected than children who had recently been vaccinated. Dr. Witt, revealing his own pre-study bias, said that when he began the study, he expected to see the illness concentrated in unvaccinated children. But what he found was that more than 80% of the children who developed whooping cough had been fully vaccinated. Now let me repeat this and why this is a significant number. If you are being vaccinated for any disease, mumps, measles, chicken pox, smallpox, it's because you are told that you will develop a lifetime immunity. Well, now we're finding with virtually every disease, people who have been fully vaccinated are coming down with the disease and even a worse strain of it, far more severe than if they had natural immunity. Natural immunity is you get chicken pox as a kid, you get over it, and for the rest of your life you really are immune. Not so with the chicken pox or the varicella or any of these other vaccines. Well, if they cannot guarantee that you will be protected, and if they cannot guarantee that you will be safe, you will not have untoward side effects, then how can they mandate it? In effect, they're playing Russian roulette, and there's no science to back them up. So what I'm saying is, so you're very clear on this, there is no scientist or physician who can guarantee that any given person given a vaccine will be protected for life and made safe with no adverse side effects from the vaccine. It is not scientifically or humanly possible to make that statement and be accurate. As a result, then we're lied to. It's just one big propaganda campaign based upon bad science. So perhaps unvaccinated children then are not the problem. During January 1 to May 20th, 2011, a total of 118 cases of measles were reported to the CDC from 23 states and New York City. There were no deaths. Among the 118 cases, 105 were both import associated and unvaccinated. That's mainly aliens coming in to work. Of the 87 U.S. residents who came down with measles, 74 were unvaccinated, 39 were under 20, and 35 were 20 or older. The CDC focused almost exclusively upon the unvaccinated measles victims, giving no time to the analysis of, hold on a second, hold on here. You're telling us about the people who are not vaccinated who came down with measles. What about the 13 who did? That's 17.5% who had been fully vaccinated with the MMR vaccine, and they got measles anyhow. Shouldn't you focus upon the fact that you have a completely faulty protocol? And while the CDC uses these incidents of disease outbreaks to stress the need for vigilant adherence to the vaccine schedule, the real take-home message is 17.5% of a group of fully vaccinated individuals got sick despite the vaccine. That means there is no science to prove that any given person will be protected from what they're being vaccinated against. One thing, however, certain, the unvaccinated people in this group who recovered, all of them recovered, now they have lifetime immunity against measles. For the ones who got the measles despite having been vaccinated, we won't know until they get sick. Could the vaccine prevent these people from developing their normal lifetime immunity? So far, no researchers taken on this issue. Likewise, there was a 1985 outbreak of measles in a Texas community in which 14 students contracted measles. All of the students have been fully vaccinated, no exceptions, and no reports of exposure from foreign endemic areas of any other student. So 14 out of 14 got measles. Mumps is another virus frequently found to arise in vaccinated population. In 2006, the U.S. experienced the largest nationwide mumps epidemic in 20 years, primarily affecting college students in dormitories and characterized by a two-dose failure rate among college students vaccinated in childhood. Authorities tried to blame the outbreak on crowded living conditions in the dorms, instead of considering the obvious, the vaccines simply were not effective for very long. In 2009 and 10, New York and New Jersey witnessed more than 1,500 cases amongst the mumps. Victims had all been vaccinated, fully vaccinated. 88% of the affected children had received at least one vaccine. 75% had received two vaccines. Well, then what do you do? Well, that's where they start saying, well, we better give me a booster. Well, how many boosters? How long would the booster last? They don't know. Then you have chickenpox. Varicella is yet another example of a vaccine that doesn't work as well as doctors would have us believe. After one shot of the vaccine, which was licensed in the United States in 1995, 25% of the children were still spreading the varicella virus or getting sick themselves. 25% had been vaccinated. Ann Gershon, a chickenpox expert who is director of the Division of Pediatric Infectious Disease at Columbia University Medical Center, says, quote, we really need boosters of vaccines much more than we thought we ever would. You think? No one questions his conclusions. How many boosters are enough? Our vaccines do not confer an immunity that lasts. How long does it last? No one knows. Well, if you give it to 100 people, some are children, some are adults, some are seniors, will it last the same in any given group? We don't know. If you only had people 10 years old and you had 1,000 of them who all got the same vaccine, would they all confer the same immunity? We don't know. So in other words, without any real knowledge, because none of the real studies that real scientists would do have been done. So we know that our vaccines do not confer immunity that lasts. And so to counter this steady waning of effectiveness, more and more and more vaccines are required. This is just stupid. So in 2006, the CDC recommended that a second chickenpox shot be added to the list of childhood vaccines. And so it continues. The most glaring example by far of a vaccine with limited immunogenicity is the flu vaccine. Created from a combination of strains that have occurred previously, the flu vaccine is given in a type of Russian roulette, with the vaccine makers hoping that one or more of the strains might actually be the one that is most prevalent in a given year. Can they predict success with any accuracy? No. Does the flu vaccine confer any long-lasting immunity? Not at all. If it did, the CDC would not be recommending since 2010 that everyone over the age of 6 months get a flu shot every single year. And on the subject of immunity, all the CDC is willing to claim is that the flu shot will last throughout the entire flu season. Well, how long is that? December to March. 4 months. But weren't there studies showing that the people got the flu shot were not protected? Yes. And weren't they the senior citizens, the children, the very people they said needed the most? Yes. So then they have a completely worthless system? Yes. So the evidence is overwhelming that vaccines lack the ability to confer a long-lasting immunity. Despite such evidence, however, the deck is clearly stacked on the side of the pro-vaccine CDC, FDA, and the vaccine manufacturers. It seems anti-American and anti-science to be skeptical of the long-term benefit of vaccines, since there seems to be such an agreeing with each other, both from the powers that be in the media, that aren't vaccines great? No, they're not. Too many Americans unquestionably roll up their sleeve for everything that the CDC recommends without considering the consequences. They want us to believe that there are no simple answers to the question of whether natural immunity caused by exposure to a germ is better than industrial version. In fact, there are simple answers, obvious answers, but no one wants the public to stop and think about the fact that vaccines cannot be counted on to produce lifetime immunity, but natural immunity can. Prior to the development of the 36 childhood vaccines that we currently give to children under 6, it was common and expected for children to get measles, chickenpox, mumps, and German measles, rubella. These childhood diseases spread through a family, a school class, a neighborhood, usually causing annoying but relatively minor illnesses with a few days off from school, and then the child would recover and be immune for life. Parents actually went out of their way to expose their children to the disease so that they could get them over with. They weren't afraid of their children getting sick. So what has happened now? Tomorrow, I will discuss the changing paradigm, why we are destroying our immune systems, and if we keep on, we'll have no natural immunity left, which makes us extremely vulnerable to the simplest of microorganisms to hurt us. I'm Gary Knoll. This is up on my website with all the references, the full articles, Part 1 and Part 2. Part 3, 4, and 5 are to come. I'm going to go in tomorrow into what is your immune system. You're going to get a real classroom on and humoral immunity and cell-mediated immunity. I'm going to take you step by step through your body to show you what will cause good immunity and what will hurt your system. And then I'll go into the safety of vaccines, what goes into making them, and then the politics behind them. Let's go over now and say hello to, let's see here, Alex from New York. Hi, Alex, you're on. Alex, please speak up.
Yes, this is Alexander Perry. I'm a sustainable community networker here in the city. And we're synergizing a lot of our community efforts with different skills and services and more on an intergenerational level with different people of different ages, so very young people to very old people, including the people from Occupy Wall Street from last week. And what I wanted to ask you, Gary, is how either you can be a speaker at one of our events or how we can work more closely with your community more seamlessly to synergize all our efforts and come together, because it's clearly it's happening as we speak. So just wanted to ask you that.
Be happy to help your group. I'm in New York for the next 4 weeks, and then I go out filming again and helping to establish. I've been asked by groups around the world, but I come in and help them because some of them have got off on the wrong foot.
Sure.
I see some of these shared living communities. They're a disaster.
Yeah.
I see some of these eco villages. There's nothing unique about them outside the fact that they've used some green building materials, but
right.
They're not set up for sustainability. You know, they still have to, they're much like bedroom communities. So there is a different model, a radically different model that I've been thinking about, and I'll be happy to share the ideas of sustainability in certain environments. But as a friend of mine said from Texas this week, there are places in Texas now that in 5 years those cities will not be able to exist because they're running out of water. Even the eco villages there, even the positive environments and the good-minded progressive people, you can't exist if you don't have water. And
sure.
So we have to be smart enough to look at where are the most sustainable places, what is necessary to sustain, and how can we go about doing it? What tools can we develop now? So I'll be happy to do that. If you just keep in contact with Jason from Progressive Radio Network, I'll be happy to come down to one of your meetings and speak with you and share some ideas, all right?
Sure. Gary, one other question real quick. I was wondering, ever consider creating a mentorship program to create people who are more leadership built? I mean, not all of us are built to be leaders. And some have more visionary skills. Other ones have operational
skills. It depends upon your. That's already in the agenda. In the community I'm designing, there will be a center called Remarkable Minds Symposium, where every day people from around the world who have remarkable minds will be not just sharing insights and information on the issues of our day and how to make positive change, but also acting as a forum for people who want to learn those skills themselves and apply it where they can, where they live. That's the value of the Internet. You don't have to be in a place in order to benefit from others who are in that place. All the best to you, Alex. Good to know you're out there doing what you're doing. Let's now say hello to, is it Matt from New York City?
It's Mayat. That's the comedic principle of truth, justice, and right. Gary, I want to first get a point of clarification and a thank you before I make my main comment. First, I'd like to know, for those who weren't able to get to the films and the panel, could you direct us as to how we might and this is when I get off the air so I can jot it down. You mentioned about Internet access to that program, so I definitely would like to see that.
Okay.
And my thank you is Netra, the Most High bless you for that program last night. It was so important. I called an elder friend who doesn't have Internet access. Your 3-hour special on 9/11 truth, it was just superb, outstanding. I'll be listening again and holding on to that. Thank you so much. I want to remind us, because you're bringing up an excellent topic around the weather, I want to remind us about Secretary of Defense Cohen, when he was in office. I can't remember the exact date now, but he made a statement around the technologies that many of these countries have about, to the effect about the who would be owning the weather in 2025.
Okay, it wasn't owning the weather. It is the capacity to manipulate weather. And we are doing a whole special on that. Now, hang up and I'll give you the information you need. First, I want to thank the thousands upon tens of thousands of people who are now have watched Knocking on the Devil's Door. We, every moment, our office is flooded with people. Can we get this translated into Hebrew, and as we did with drugging of our children? Yes, you can. If you want to get this dubbed into a language in your country, you can do that. I want to get this on cable systems. As of today, as of when we speak now, Knocking on the Devil's Door is available by going to either GaryNull.com or calling 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065. And then the articles that support the documentary are up on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com or KnockingOnTheDevil'sDoor.com. There are hundreds of articles. Oh, okay, thank you. Jason just walked in. We're going to go to Luann in a second. Hi, Jason.
Hi, good afternoon, Gary. Hi, I just wanted to...
Yeah, you're on.
Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't hear myself. Just wanted to congratulate you and everyone who has worked on Death by Medicine, the new documentary you have. It's been accepted to over 50 film festivals this season, which, as far as we know, is the film that's been most accepted by anyone. That's impressive, so congratulations on that. And then also wanted to add, last night on your three-hour special, we had over 40,000 unique listeners joining us for the 3 hours, the whole 3 hours, not just a little bit, the whole thing.
That was 40,000 over the Internet.
Correct.
And that means we'll have probably 200,000 unique downloads or more, and then those are taken, put in on other sites. My hope is that we'll have upwards of 1 million unique listeners to that program within the next 10 days, and I think it's realistic. I was very pleased about it. We've already put that up, and it's up on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. People should start listening to this. This is a real eye-opener, 3 hours of stuff they did not know, haven't heard, new information, new insights that will push, that it will push down a lot of the barriers that we've had about the truth about 9/11. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And again, if you want to listen to the 3-hour special on deconstructing the lies of the 9/11 official report, just go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, download it. Luann Panessi, nice to have you with us, Luann.
Me, and again, thank you for that. Let me make the correction, 3.5-hour special last night. I know I wasn't the only one who sat there with my jaw dropped, riveted from this information. It was amazing, and it's a show that every single person in your audience needs to listen to.
Well, thank you.
So,
I am confident that with the people, by the way, our video streaming is working today, so people can watch the program by going to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. If you want to share insights and information, word of mouth is the best way of doing it. We don't need the mainstream media. We don't need mainstream or land-based stations to do it. We have created our own way of communicating, and that's good. Now, you were going to talk today about crime, because recently, right beside you, there was a crime committed, and there's just no crime, supposedly, where you're at. And everywhere in America, you're going to see crime where you didn't see it before. Tell us about what you're finding about gangs in the suburbs.
Yeah, you know, I grew up in Hicksville, which is a kind of a middle-class area on Long Island back then. And we had our little bullies in the neighborhood, and we all kind of steered clear of them. We didn't want to get in their way. And yet, we never really had the intense crimes, the violent crimes that we're seeing now. I mean, in the past, we learned that there were certain lower-income or at-risk communities, we call them, that the lower economic bracket of population, where over the last, say, 10 to 15 years, there had been a rise in gang activity, and even in the inner cities. So you think I think West Side Story, it's mostly turf wars, culture wars, and we have gangs that kind of, you know, they have their own identity, they have their own uniforms and things like that, and they were rampant, and the police had to put a lot of time on them. What I'm noticing now is that there are brutal slayings happening on Long Island, much more than we ever had in the past, and it's not lower-income areas. It's now spreading into the middle-class enclaves and the upper-middle-class enclaves of Long Island. And there's a message for these people that live in these areas. People are just dumbfounded. They you see on the news, this never happened here before. Well, yeah, because we're not accustomed to this. When brutal violence is commonplace, it's accepted as normal. And this is part of the risk of living in some of these communities. But in these middle-class communities, we're seeing. And the middle-class communities, Gary, are like communities that assume that crime is somebody else's problem. That's really how we grew up. We believed in, it didn't happen around here. It'll happen out there, but it doesn't happen in here. Well, now it's not only happening, but it's happening on a much higher level. And I remember the show that you talked about this happening. And no one believed it could possibly happen, but it is. It's here.
Well, it's in Sedona now. And rampant crime in Sedona. It's no longer an artist's spiritual retreat that it once was. Massive bankruptcies, lots of drug violence. First, you have to understand that it is partially racial, because as long as Latinos or blacks were in the environment that many of them lived in and committed crimes, the average person outside that environment didn't care. You know, if they want to kill themselves, let them kill themselves. That was their attitude. So our insensitivity to the needs of other people was part of what laid the bedrock for this. Then we didn't have the jobs. Then we didn't have the education that people could really benefit from. Then we didn't have the social services to help people who needed help, but the bureaucracy was not there to help them. And as a result, in the absence of constructive, positive input, we saw a maladaptation in some individuals. And if a teenager today is saying, my mom can't afford the rent, and we can't afford food, and we're about to lose it, and if someone says, well, you'll never have to worry about your rent or food again, we'll pay for it. You'll have money in your pocket. Your mom will have money in her pocket. What do I got to do? Well, we're going to have you, and then suddenly that person's in a gang. I predict that we'll have 5 million members of gangs, up to 20% of them former military, in the next 3 years.
Well,
then you will see America as either gated communities with lots of security, or you'll see Mad Max in America. You'll see urban warfare as we've never seen it. Plus, of course, the services will go down. The streets, garbage and pickup. Go down and visit. Go down and drive through Camden, New Jersey. Camden, New Jersey will become the new norm around America in the next 3 years. Your thoughts, Luann?
Well, one of the initiations into gangs is, in order to get your letters or your symbols tattooed on you, you have to involve yourself in some kind of violent act, and that shows your commitment to the group. And once you're in the group, just like you said, you've got instant family, and people believe that there is this illusion of security in knowing that someone's going to protect you. But in order to do that, you have to hurt someone else to show your commitment. And these gangs they used to be very not organized. They were basically just, you know, turf on turf type things, and the groups would fight each other. And a lot of them originated from South America, Central America, and Mexico. And now, with all of the lack of immigration laws that we really have in the country, they infiltrated L.A., and in L.A., they started getting organized. I've been doing a lot of reading on this. I'm absolutely amazed at the information I found. And what's happening now is they're becoming organized. Just like you said, we have ex-military people that gave up, you know, their freedom. They're fighting for us overseas. They come home, and they're living in tent cities. And after a while, they say, well, we've got to protect ourselves here. And the next thing you know, you've got gangs coming in. They know a lot about violence, and they become organized. They give their leadership skills from the military right to the gangs. And they've evolved from this turf and culture war, and now they're competing in the fields of human trafficking, prostitution, street drugs, prescription drugs, and weapons. And this reaches into the middle class and even into some upper class neighborhoods. And when you step back and say, well, now, what are some of the characteristics of these gangs? Well, they have leaders, and they create rules, and you have to follow the rules. And if you dare not follow the codes of loyalty, you can face fierce punishment and even death. See, their despicable violence is endemic in their culture. They have no sanctity for human life. So the crimes are becoming more vicious, more heinous, and they still get away with them. And now instead of, again, fighting each other, they're pulling together. The MS-13 group, Mara Salvatrucha group, they started in South America. They've infiltrated all over the United States now, and they are pulling in many of the other groups that are Afro-Americans, Salvadorans, even the Hells Angels. These are organized gangs, and they're all starting to come together.
Okay, that's the problem, and it's going to get exponentially worse. You will not be safe unless you're in a very controlled environment in the very near future. Here's what we have to do. We have to focus on one of the solutions. I won't today, I don't have time, but tomorrow I'll play a clip from Donald Rumsfeld testifying before Congress, where he says, we can't find $2.3 trillion. It's gone, it's missing. Where $50 billion in hard cash was stolen out of Iraq, and we don't know where it went, none of it. And now you start looking at the numbers of amounts of money that is being spent for the rich and powerful, those on the inside, the corruption in the bureaucracies, especially the bureaucracies that have no oversight, which are almost all governmental agencies. Even at the state level, you have this corruption. And then put yourself as the average person. You're having a hard time just making ends meet. You're having a rough day. You're getting bills and you don't have money to cover them. So you got to pay one bill with a credit card, max it out. Then when the bill comes in, pay another bill with another credit card. And you look at these people who are making gazillions and you're thinking, that's not fair. Okay, what do we need to do to make it fair? Well, first we have to stop looking for solutions within the existing political paradigm. It is not possible. Both the Democrats and Republicans, the leadership, have contributed to the ghettoization of America. First it was the ghettoization of specific ethnic groups, and we sure did support that ghettoizing. Then it is take away jobs in every community. And if you're in a steel town, if you're down in Texas, and you're one of those towns that used to have some industry, but that industry's been offshored to Mexico or China or someplace else, and no one's there to give you another job, and you can't just get up and leave because your family's there, then you become unemployed. What do you do when you're unemployed? Do you sing? Do you dance? Are you happy? No. You drink. You're angry. You watch television. Sometimes you go on meds. And then if someone says you got a chance to make some money off drugs, then drugs are the ticket. The number one fuel for all of these drugs has been, historically, drugs provide the money, the illicit drugs. Now it's medications. Methamphetamine is one of the biggest, and that's out of Florida. So what we want to do is we want to de-ghettoize America. First, go in and provide people with the emotional, the financial, the medical, and the life type of services they need just to survive. Clean up their neighborhoods. If you went into a place like Camden and you made it a citywide effort and you paid each person that would participate and you had supervision from the community groups, then suddenly streets get cleaned up, garbage gets hauled away, houses get rehabilitated because you're hiring and training people to do this and you're bringing back some sanctity of life. Without a sanctity of life, when you've kicked people to the gutter, even those who did nothing to get there on their own. This was not because anyone was lazy or born violent. It's because of the circumstances around them. The people who have jobs, the people who have pensions, the people who have food on the table, take a moment and go where people haven't. That's where I am every day filming for the last year. You'll see people who are now telling you that they have to go steal food. because there's no food around for them to get. The food pantries are empty. They go and stand in line at a church where they used to be able to get something. Now the church says, sorry, there's no food. Well, what are you going to do if you don't have something? And what is your teenage son or daughter going to do? And someone then holds out promise. So we've got to go in there and we've got to replace them. We could have a new civil conservation corps planting 100 million trees and shrubs per state. We could go in and reconstruct and take over all abandoned buildings, make them into livable habitats. We could put proper counseling, drug interdiction, and family counseling, and violence interdiction, and de-gang, a sanctuary for people who are in gangs to get out of gangs. We could do a lot that we're not doing at all. And it would reemploy people, it would give them a sense of meaning, it would show them people are there to help them. But instead of doing that, more money for the military-industrial complex, more money for major corporations, Democrats and Republicans alike are the problem, and the solution will not come from them. And also decriminalize drugs. If you want to take away the economic incentive, take away the profit in selling drugs. When you take away the profit, and then you give treatment centers for people, then you have won the war on drugs. And right now we have not won the longest, most costly war in American history, the war on drugs. It's a stupid war, but look at all the people making money from it. Look at the private ownership of prisons. Look at the people who benefit from all these interdiction programs. They are all making money, private contractors. And that's what we have to stop. But the politicians are beholden to them, not to solving the problem. So thank you for calling in and sharing your concerns, but I'm going to tell you, Long Island is going to be one of the most gang and crime-plagued communities in America because it has so much wealth, and it has so much middle-class wealth, upper-middle-class wealth, professional-class wealth, and these are not mainly gated communities out there. They're towns, they're areas, they're suburban developments. Makes it very easy for them to be targets. So you can watch over the next 2 years as society begins to unravel. Watch what happens with the gangs, the violence, the beatings, and everything else on Long Island. You are in for an ass kicking out there. Luann, thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
And by the way, I was told just now, quote, don't worry, our cops are the highest paid in the world. Well, didn't know that. And maybe the one that did the pepper spray on the innocent women who were just out there doing their right protest, maybe that cop should take a class in sensitivity training and stop being a cop. I'm not thrilled about all the armed conflict I see and how people who become able to wear a badge or have an arm, how quickly they are to use it without first using reason as their first response. Have a nice day, everyone.
Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matthew Bogart. All shows are archived by Kyle Pollard. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Jason Taubenfeld.